accession number 20512, Reel 1.
General Tower, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Scotland in 1917.
Whereabouts in Scotland?
Rue in Dunbartonshire.
Can you tell me a little about your education, please?
I went to Hawtrey's Preparatory School at Westgate-on-Sea, then to Harrow School, and then to the Royal Military Academy at Woolwich.
Why did you want to go in for the army?
Well, because my father was an admiral, and I thought I was going in the navy. But when I was 12, my eyes were tested, and the navy was out. So I decided, we were very much a service family, so I decided to go in the army instead.
Which years were you at Sandhurst?
I wasn't at Sandhurst, I was at Woolwich.
Oh, Woolwich, rather.
Woolwich, 1935 to 1937.
How did you find your time there?
Well, it was rather a shock after Harrow School, where one lived a very easy life. But I enjoyed it, and I was in the saddle ride, and I was captain of fencing, and I was commissioned from there.
What did you have in mind at that stage, as far as the army was concerned?
I don't think I had any expectations particularly, except I thought I'd probably enjoy myself in the services.
Had you wanted to go in the artillery?
Yes, because at Woolwich in those days, only the top 20 cadets could go in the engineers at the passing out list, and I wasn't one of those. And we also supplied officers for the Royal Corps signals.
And after Woolwich?
I went straight to India, where I was a second lieutenant in a field regiment at Jhansi in what was then the United Provinces. We were horse-drawn, very old-fashioned, iron-shod guns, really World War I vintage, and horses.
Was this British Army or Indian Army?
British Army.
So what unit were you with in?
The 25th Field Regiment.
What kind of duties did this regiment have at that time?
Well, we were a support regiment for the Jhansi Infantry Brigade.
Did you have any active service in India?
No, because my regiment had his horses taken away at Christmas 1939, and we moved down to Kirki near Pune and mechanized and left for Egypt in August 1940.
What was life like for a British Army officer in Jhansi in the late 30s?
Well, it was great fun. We played polo, we stuck pig, we had a lot of very good shooting, and we had all the fun of having our horses.
Did you travel about India much?
Sorry, I want to cough. No, I went to Delhi for Delhi Week. I went to Meerut to look at ponies, to buy polo ponies, and I went down once to Bhopal to buy polo ponies from the Maharaja of Bhopal.
How much contact did you have with the Indian population?
Well, of course, in those days, British artillery regiments in India were half British soldiers and half Indian soldiers. All our administrative wagons were manned by Indian soldiers, Sikhs and Marathas and things. And we took them to Egypt when we went in 1940. But one didn't have much contact with the local town. One lived a rather separate life, as most British people did in India in those days.
Were you ever called out in aid of the civil power?
No.
Did you expect at that time that a war was coming?
Oh, I think so, yes. I think by 1938, it was pretty obvious there was going to be a war.
How did the news of the war's outbreak come to you?
On a railway station, I was travelling back from Nowshera, near Bombay, from a MT course. And I was in the train, and we were at a station, and they broadcast Neville Chamberlain saying that the war had begun.
How did people react to that?
Well, at the moment, not at all. The train just moved off. And when I got back to Jhansi the next day, I think people already said, well, it was coming anyway, wasn't it?
How did you feel about it personally?
In fact, the war hardly hit India till after Dunkirk. When we went down to mechanize it near Pune, as I told you, we still wore plain clothes on Sundays. We went to the races there in plain clothes. I went down to Bombay to play polo there, again in plain clothes. And it wasn't until the Dunkirk evacuation that a harsher regime crept in. We had to wear a uniform all the time. It seems very odd now, but we were a long way away from Europe.
What kind of equipment did your unit have in India?
As I said, we had 18 pounders and 4.5-inch howitzers of World War I vintage.
And then, what are your next memories?
Well, during the period January to August 1940, we were gradually re-equipped with new guns with rubber wheels and with transport and tractors to pull them, with which we embarked for Egypt in end of August.
How did the move go?
Very peacefully. We got in our ship and we went to Suez. We were bombed by the Italian Air Force, or they attempted to bomb us, but the bombs never came very close, near Aden.
What were conditions like in the voyage?
Do you know, I really can't remember. There was nothing notable about them. We were perfectly comfortable. We were in a troop ship.
What was your job and rank at this time?
Well, I had just become adjutant of the regiment. That's the chief of staff officer to the commanding officer.
Who was the commanding officer?
A very nice chap called Derry Dibb. But he went on early to Egypt and in fact was promoted. And we got a new colonel, Colonel Myberg.
And on arrival in Egypt?
We went to a Mina camp just near the pyramids where we spent 4 to 6 weeks, I can't quite remember, 4 to 6 weeks getting used to travelling in the desert and the use of sun compasses and all the tricks of being desert worthy. And then we moved up to Martin Baghouch in late November 1940. Near Mirza Matruh.
What did you do there?
We went on training and we then took part in the battles of Sidi Barani and the Nabaiwas, by which General Dick O'Connor defeated the Italian army under Graziani.
Can you take me through your personal memories of that fighting, please?
But I remember thinking how amazing it was that we could move two whole divisions about 70 miles across the desert without the Italians spotting us, which we did, because it was a complete surprise to the Italians when on the morning, I think it was December the 9th, I can't quite remember, we were all ready for action and it started at dawn with us firing on the first attack by my division, the 4th Indian Division, on Nibaiwa. The Italians had moved forward about 2 months before from Libya and then stopped on a line going south from Sidi Barani and established these armoured camps, or these fortified camps, and then stopped.
Can you tell me about the role of your own regiment in that?
Well, my regiment fired support for the attack on Nabaiwa by the 11th Indian Infantry Brigade, and then that was at dawn, which was a complete success. And we had some I tanks, those being very slow-moving infantry tanks, which walked over the Italian defences. And then we fired another program for the Nabaiwa East at about midday, and then finally, as dusk was getting near, we fired a third program, and there was a dust storm blowing by then against Sidi Barani itself.
Did you have any incoming fire from the Italians?
A little, nothing very much.
Any casualties?
One or two, but a negligible amount. It was a complete walkover.
Did you see Italian prisoners?
Oh, yes, hundreds and thousands of them.
What impression did they create?
The main impression was they were so delighted that, to quote a phrase, for them the war was over. There was no resistance or trouble at all. They just herded themselves, and they were marched off to the east in the general direction of Cairo. The trouble was we couldn't spare many people to look after them or to guard them.
Were they supplied with anything?
They had their personal weapons, that was about all. But they had taken forward to these camps an immense amount of luxurious goods. I mean, we were delighted with bottles of Chianti and every sort of food that they had, which we were living on bouillon biscuits and getting desert sores.
Did you get them yourself?
Yeah. Everybody did.
What exactly were they?
Well, they were sores on your thing about that beat, all over your arms and sometimes on your body. It was purely because you had no fresh food. I mean, bouillon biscuits is not an ideal diet. And when we, as I'll tell you presently, when we got on a ship to go down to Sudan, within 3 days on good fresh food, they'd all disappeared, or most of them.
How did the troops like it in the desert?
I think we all got... We came back to the desert, you see. I haven't told you about going to Sudan yet. We were in the desert till the summer of 1942, and I think people got very used to it.
So after this big success against the Italians, what are your next memories?
We thought, all of us, we were going to go on with the other division, 7th Armoured Division, towards Libya. But in fact, we suddenly got the order, to everybody's surprise, to go back to the Delta. And we weren't told why, but to go back to the Delta, to be relieved by an Australian division, the first Australian division that had arrived in Egypt. And then we got back to the Delta, and we were in a camp near Alexandria. And then we were told we were going down to Port Sudan to go into, take part in the campaign to recapture Eritrea and Abyssinia.
This was the whole of your division?
That was the whole division, yes.
Can you tell me about going to East Africa, please?
It was a funny sort of move. All the guns and their tractors were put in we had 24 guns by then, in a separate consignment, and were driven up the Nile, south, towards Khartoum. The soldiers and officers and all the rest of us were put in ships to go down to Port Sudan from Suez. Now, I always remember we got to Suez, and we were then told the ship we were going in was a liner called the Reina del Pacifico, and we were going to be taken out to her, and I had been appointed ship's adjutant. And out we went in lighters towed and got on board the ship, which we found to our amazement was wholly unconverted for war use. She was in all her peacetime glory, peacetime food, peacetime drink. And we were obviously very pleased. So we got on board, and all the soldiers, everybody were given their accommodation, and we settled down to eat and drink. And we thought that was it. And then about 9 o'clock at night, I was suddenly called for urgently by the captain of the ship and said, the Cameron Highlanders have arrived alongside and are banging on the ship's side to come in. The Cameron Highlanders were part of our brigade. And so they were duly got into the ship and they proceeded. It was New Year's Eve. So you can imagine what they felt when they got on board the ship. But anyway, they were got on board. And next morning we sailed for Portsdown.
What was the voyage like?
Switch it off for me. It was a perfectly peaceful voyage. We were bombed most ineffectually by the Italian Air Force. But we got into Portsdown, where we met by a staff officer who said, you must get off the ship quickly because they all attack this port every night. So we disembarked and we got into a train and at dusk chugged off into Sudan in the general direction of Khartoum. And we all went to sleep. And I remember waking up at dawn to find we stopped at a place called Gedaref, I can't quite remember. And I looked out, and there was a completely naked Fuzzy Wuzzy with a Fuzzy Wuzzy hair, standing on one leg and a stick, just as tradition. There, where we stopped. And then our advance party we sent ahead said, come on, we're now going to motor down in the general direction of Agordat, A-G-O-R-D-A-T, on the border of Sudan and Eritrea, which is the first place we're going to attack. And we had no maps there. We just had handkerchief maps. We really had no detail on them at all. So I never could quite understand how we got there, but we did get there or to the right place. And then either the next day or the day after, we started our advance into Eritrea by bombarding Agordat. But the Italians had already evacuated and run it back into Eritrea.
What was the country like to move through?
Dry, rough, lot of thorn bushes, certain number of trees. They were rather useful because they were for shade point of view, but not an awful lot. But we weren't near the cultivated bits of the Sudan at all.
And were you meeting with no resistance?
Well, we met with no resistance around Agordat. And we then advanced, and at a place called Keru, K-E-R-U, next day, we had an interesting experience because we were charged by Italian cavalry. And our guns, it was at dawn, our guns were just literally unhooked. They hadn't been deployed at all properly. So it was rather tricky. It was shells flying about all over the place. I don't know that we hit many Italians, but the charge was in fact broken up by Skinner's horse, an armoured car regiment to the Indian Army, Indian Cavalry. And off they went. But we always thought it was probably the last cavalry charge of World War II, but that has been disputed since by many people.
What were these cavalrymen armed with?
Rifles and horses and swords.
You mean they were waving swords?
One or two of them were, yes. They were native cavalry, Italian officers.
How much of this cavalry charge did you personally see?
I think I saw the whole of it, because I was sitting, I was in a trench by then by one of the guns, hoping that it would go away, which it did. And then we deployed the guns properly and went on to Agadir on the way to Kerun.
Did these cavalrymen reach our trenches?
We hadn't got any trenches. They were gun. They were hardly gun pits. We'd hardly started to dig them. No, they got up within 100 yards, actually, but no nearer than there.
And were they just being shot down?
They were being shot at, and some of them were being killed or wounded, and the rest pushed off.
About how many of them were there?
I should think about 150.
What did you think of this?
Well, I was surprised and very glad to see their backs.
Did you admire them?
Yes, I think I probably did. I thought they were rather brave men.
Were any of them captured?
No.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, we then advanced, the Italians left this gorge of Keru, K-E-R-U, and we went on to Agadir, which was the next town being held by the Italians. And that proved a rather harder nut to crack. And we were there about 2 days, and eventually it fell, and we went on towards Kerun, which was a big mountain, mountain defended position between the frontier and Massawa and Asmara. And they were proper mountains.
What role did your unit play there?
Well, we were supporting the brigade of the 4th Indian Division. It was the advance guard, particularly the Cameron Hounders, who were ahead of us. And I used to travel with my commanding officer then in a radio car, all very simple in those days. And we got to Kerun, which were really quite high mountains round. And I always remember my commanding officer saying, who had a very distinguished record in World War I, he said, if we don't take this Philip in the next 24 hours, we shall be here for 6 weeks. And we didn't, and we were.
What conditions were you living under there?
Bullion biscuits again, and an odd bit of fresh fruit, and of course our sleeping bags at night, which was, and just beside our trucks.
How much artillery did the Italians have there?
I really don't remember, but quite a lot. They had very good troops at Italian troops. Savoy Grenadiers, I remember, were very good. They had quite a lot of artillery.
Were there shells falling amongst your men?
Yeah. And we had quite a lot of casualties, too.
What effect could your guns have on the enemy there?
Well, the difficulty was being able to drop the shells behind the mountain tops from which the observation people and they were defending, because our 25 pounders did not have very, they had a very flat trajectory. So quite often they just went over the top. One really wanted howitzers, which would have a much more high and low trajectory, so you would drop shells behind the mountains. But eventually we hit them quite hard. But of course we were in a very long delicate line of communications all the way back to Khartoum, I mean several hundred miles, and an awful lot of stuff took a long time to come up, including ammunition. For instance, I mean, 25-pounders need oil for their recoil system, and we couldn't get that at all. We just had to use engine oil for the recoil system, which wasn't really very satisfactory and quite against all the rules. But we had no alternative.
How did the engine oil work?
It worked to a reasonable extent, but it wasn't very good for the guns. I'll tell you more about that later.
Any incidents that happened to you personally at Kerun?
I went off one day, and my colonel said, you can go off and look for a way round to the right in these mountains. And I went off with two soldiers, armed as a guard, and I walked out here several miles with our very, very bad maps. And I suddenly came round a corner, and there were four or five men, locals, in their white sort of shawls they wore, very heavily armed. And I must admit I was rather shaken by this, because I didn't want to get killed in some obscure corner of the Sudan. But anyway, we managed to persuade them. We were all on the same side, because I was looking for somewhere to go around. And then I went back, but it was a slightly unnerving occasion.
Did they adopt a menacing demeanour?
Yes, they did, to start with, but we managed to talk them out of it.
Who did they think you were?
Oh, they thought we were Italians, I think.
Were they some kind of partisans?
No, the partisans didn't exist. They were just locals who, everybody kills everybody in that part of the world.
What else do you remember from this time, please?
I remember the business of getting ammunition and food up to our troops and our observation posts up on these mountainsides. I mean, our radios were very heavy in those days. And they all had wet batteries. They didn't have dry batteries. And they were very heavy. And they all had to be carried up every day or every night to our observation posts up on the hillside, on the top of the mountains. It was quite a business. I mean, if you had 10 signalers, probably two signalers were actually doing the signaling. All the others were portering these things up the mountain.
How did Indian troops react to fighting in the Horn of Africa?
Oh, they were excellent. Just as good as the British troops.
Were they happy to be there, do you think?
Oh, yes, I'm sure they were, because they were being used to serving with us.
What happened next?
Well, we eventually, Kerun fell, and we had sent one of our two batteries some weeks prior back in Sudan, back to Port Sudan, and right down the coast of the Red Sea, where the British brigade was going down there, and then encircling Kerun to the rear. So when Kerun fell, our headquarters and our other battery went through Kerun and down to the Red Sea to meet with the force, with our other battery on the shores of the Red Sea, which we duly did. And I always remember the first thing everybody thought, including me, to see the Red Sea, was how lovely to get our clothes off and at least get some sort of wash, because, I mean, there's so little water, you did very little washing. And everybody stripped off and rushed into the sea. We weren't in contact with the enemy at that moment. And I was a little late, because I was adjutant, and I think I was on the radio, and I'd just stripped off, going down to sea, and I suddenly saw shark's fins appearing, and everybody coming out of the water jolly quick. So I got a little bit of a bathe, not much.
And then?
And then we went south, and we did the attack on Massawa, the port on the Red Sea, the Eritrean port on the Red Sea. And it was extremely hot. This was April 41, I suppose.
What happened in the attack on Massawa?
It capitulated quite quickly. It didn't take very long. And then the Italians were rounded up and put into ships and taken off to captivity. In India, I think.
Did the artillery pieces have to be used?
Our artillery?
Yes.
Yes, we fired into Massawa. But it wasn't a big battle.
Was that the end of the campaign as far as you were concerned?
As we were concerned. The people in the King of the African Rifles and the people coming from Kenya came up and eventually took the surrender of the Duke of Aosta at Ambalaji a few weeks later. That was the end of the Italian Empire.
What was the morale like in your division by then?
I think, very high. There was never any question of people getting depressed. I think we were all very much looking forward to going back to Egypt and probably spending a few nights in Cairo or anything.